Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's begin. Tonight is what we're calling Halachic Men Season 5. This is Episode 7. Basically, what we have been doing over the summers for the last number of years is giving a bit of history regarding some of the figures who are responsible for the halacha the way we have it today. That's basically what we've been doing. And we spent most of this summer talking about the Rambam, about Maimonides. And as we mentioned, the Rambam was a controversial figure. Maimonides wrote his book on halacha, and the Rambam did not quote any sources. So if you read a section of Maimonides and you finish the section, you're not sure where it comes from. And there's a famous letter of the Rambam that we spoke about where he regretted not giving sources. And he said, if I'd be able to live longer, I'd put together another volume with the sources. So there was an opposition to the Rambam that he didn't quote sources. Part of that opposition was that everyone felt that the Rambam is trying to break the Jewish people away from the study of Gemara. And if you really believe that studying Gemara is important, you give sources that people can look up the Gemara. And in fact, the Rambam kind of went back and forth about this, and there's certainly a possibility that the Rambam felt, you know what, don't study so much Gemara, study philosophy. Philosophy is awesome, and Gemara is like the small little stuff, so study philosophy, and therefore I'll write a book, and that's all you need to know. But obviously, people oppose the Rambam for that reason. Rambam, no sources. Rambam also wrote a book of halacha where the Rambam generally quotes one opinion. His opinion. Right? Now, I guess if you write a book and you quote only someone else's opinion, that's like really stupid. But you quote your own opinion, that's also not a great idea. And the Ravid, who was the main opponent of the Rambam, the Ravid says, one second, how come you're only quoting your own opinion over here? You should know that there are other opinions, and give us the other opinions and let us decide who we think is most reasonable. How come you're getting rid of all the other opinions? So, two oppositions, two reasons to oppose the Rambam. Only a single opinion, no Gemara sources. Let's go forward. The Rush. The Rush died in the year 1327. The Rambam, if you remember, died in 1204, 1205. Rush dies in 1327. The Rush writes a book of halacha that is based on the sequence of the Gemara. Unlike the Rambam, who put together his own order, the Rush is based on the order of the Gemara, and that will push people back into the Gemara mold. And the Rush also quotes a number of different opinions. So the Rush is doing both things that people didn't like the Rambam for. The Rush tries to solve that problem, right? So his book is according to the Gemara, and his book is also a book that quotes a number of different opinions, and all is grand. Well, the Rush also, we mentioned, was someone who moved from Jewish community to Jewish community. He began in Germany, he ended up in Spain, and he encounters different cultures. And the Rush really was working very hard, and I think we spoke about this in our youth. The Rush was working very hard in trying to uproot Spanish culture from Spain. Spanish culture is the culture that views the Rambam as second in command to God. And Spanish culture, because they love the Rambam so much, the Rush is trying to move them away from that. And I'll move them away from the Rambam by going back to Gemara, by establishing yeshivot in Spain where they teach Gemara, and also by giving lots of different opinions, in particular opinions that came from Germany, etc. That's what the Rush does. Okay, all is grand. Right? Amazing.
So far, so good.
Well, here's the thing. The thing is that cultures don't change as quickly as you think they would. So the Rush has this whole plan. I'm moving to Spain, and I am going to bring the true, correct culture from Germany, because as we all know, Germans are right. Right? I'm going to
take that German culture and I will bring it onto Spanish soil and they're going to love me for it. Right? That's what the Rush felt. So the Rush was trying to take Sephardic culture and the Sephardic approach to Torah and say, you know what, my Ashkenaz approach to Torah is a lot better than your Sephardic approach to Torah. And you know what happens when people try to do that? When people try to impose their own? So they don't really get kicked out because the Rush was too impressive a person to kick him out. The Rush is the rabbi of Toledo, Spain, after he moved from Germany. The Rush really built yeshivot. He had a lot of success, but he didn't eradicate the Spanishness from the Sephardim. Right? Comes along the Rush's son, Rabbi Yaakov ben Usher. Rabbi Yaakov, the author of the Tour, and he is the next important halachic figure that we are going to talk about. And he represents the shiluv, this unification between Ashkenaz and Sfarad for the first time. Rambam, purely Sfarad. Rush, purely Ashkenaz, living on Spanish soil, trying to tell the Sfarad that you don't know what you're doing. There were some books that kind of were Ashkenaz books, but they liked the Rambam, so they would always quote the Rambam as an afterthought, but they're written in the Ashkenaz style, not in the Sfarad style. Difference between the Ashkenaz style and the Sfarad style is the difference relates to, first of all, the language that they write in. The Rambam was writing in a much simpler Hebrew to understand, not in Gemara Aramaic, but in pure Hebrew. The Ashkenaz style tends to be written in, like, Aramaic. The Ashkenaz style tends to involve many more stories, that this and this happened, and therefore this one said that, and that one said that. And the Sfarad style is what they call apodictic. I give you rules, rule, 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 right? Two different styles of how you write a halacha text. The Rush is trying to bring Ashkenaz style into Spain. Now, historically, it's really important. And the Rush brought with him books called Tosfos that he brought to Spain. And that's, like, really important. But you know what? The Sephardim didn't like it, ultimately. And they said, hey, dude, right? I don't need your Ashkenaz imports. So now we will encounter a man called the Tur, Rabbi Yaakov ben Harosh. Okay, just to get a sense of the Tur, look at this shelf. This shelf is the Tur. All of these books, right? It's a significant collection. What? In this set there are there are 22 volumes in this particular set that we have. The old Torah was 4 volumes. The Orach Chaim, Yerudeya, Evan Ezer, Choshen Mishpat. 22 volumes over here. I still don't know who gave these to the shul, but it's donated in honor of Rabbi Ezra Schwartz, but I have no idea who did it. Right when I came to the shul, like shortly after, someone gave this set. It's a beautiful set. But, what?
Maybe it was Ezra.
No, actually it wasn't. I don't know. Whoever it was, obviously I have some fans out there, but it's an important book in Halacha. It's written by the Rush's son. What we're going to do tonight is talk about the Tur. And we'll try to understand why the Tur is a really important book in Halacha. Before I define what the Tur has, I want to just tell you some bits and pieces about the life of Rabbi Yaakov ben Harosh. When was he born? We're not exactly sure. Maybe in 1269, maybe in 1270, maybe in 1280, we don't know. What we do know is that he moved to Spain together with his father in 1303, 1304. We do know that he occupied some rabbinic positions in Spain. We do know that he wrote this book by the year 1340. That we know. Which rabbinic positions he occupied, we have no idea. Which number of child of the Rush he was, we don't know. Is he son number 3, son number 4? We're not exactly sure. We don't know all that much about him.
in terms of his biography. We do know that he lived in abject poverty. Unlike his father, who began very wealthy, right? We mentioned this, that when the Rush ran away from Germany, the Rush himself, single-handedly, was very wealthy, and he wanted to ransom his own teacher, the Maharam of Wittenberg, where Maharam was put into prison, and the Rush was told by his Rebbe, don't do it. Then, because of the Rheinfleisch massacres, the Rush fled Germany into Spain. Again, he went via Provence a teeny bit, but he fled into Spain. The Rush ended up very poor. His son, the Tor, Rabbi Yaakov ben Harush, was extremely poor. All the money was lost. Okay, that's what it was. We don't know where he occupied a rabbinic position. We know very little about the Tor. But we know a lot about the book. The book is written in 1340. Now, we have books written in the year 1370 in different areas of Spain that are already quoting the Tor.
Wow.
Okay, so the Tor is written in Castile. There are books in Aragon that are written in 1370 that are quoting this. So it made it. Not only did it make it that books are quoting it, we have manuscripts of the Tor. The earliest manuscript of the Tor that we have is a manuscript that was written in Jerusalem in 1380-something. Okay, that means a heck of a lot. That means in the 40 years since this book is written, it traveled to Yerushalayim. Right now, El Al was not flying in those days. Right, so it's harder to get there. Manuscripts don't move easily.
And this is before printing.
This is before printing. We'll talk about printing in a minute. We have, ready? We have 7 complete manuscripts of the Torah. That's a lot. There are 7 different manuscripts.
How different are they?
What?
How different are they?
I haven't checked. I mean, but there are different handwritings that come from different parts of
no,
the world.
No, I
meant
like that there are like discrepancies.
Yes, there are. In fact, in this edition of the tour, one of the things that they do is they'll point out some of the different texts whenever they come up occasionally. Okay, I mean, there are... JTS Library has 2 manuscripts of the tour. There are manuscripts out there. Now, why does the number 7 mean a lot? Well, okay, I know 7 heavens, like, okay, we're not going there. But how many complete manuscripts of the Rambam are there?
Less than 7.
Excellent! You got it, Caroline. Less than 7. Right? There are, to the best of my knowledge, 2 complete manuscripts of the Rambam. Now, what that means is, from manuscript evidence, the Tor is a work that is copied more often. Okay. Okay, right. Maybe they got lost. Maybe they got lost. Let's go further. Okay? Incunabula printing. Towards the middle of the 15th century, books begin to get printed. Printing books was really hard and really expensive. You know how they talk about letters and there's uppercase letters and lowercase letters? What that means is that there were 2. You would take the letters, they would usually be copper, you would put them on a plate, set them up, and then you would press down to print.
Was it written in German?
The text, it was written in Hebrew. I don't believe there was ever a translation into German or into any other language. But there... printing of books, incunabula books that are printing, which is basically until the end of the 16th century, that's the way they call it, these books were very expensive. Now, we have a lot of books of the Torah that were printed, okay? The fellow who I'm quoting mostly tonight is a fellow, Judah Galinsky. He's a professor of Jewish history in Tel Aviv. Judah Galinsky gives us a whole Torah of how many incunabula there are of the Torah versus other books. How many of the Torah are they? So, he basically says that there are in Spain printed in the years 1479 to 1482, there are three different editions. 1485 in Portugal. Whatever, he gives you the whole Torah. A lot of these books are printed. Inquisition. Torquemada. You heard of him?
Bad.
Not a bad man. Not a good man. Torquemada. I didn't mean that.
Was Spain a Muslim country?
Spain is a Christian country. The whole issue within Spain is the issue of the Reconquista. That's like the big issue. Spain is divided into Christian Spain or Muslim Spain. In Christian Spain, Jews are kicked out. 1492, right? Ferdinand and Isabel. By the way, Ferdinand was the king of Aragon, and that's a different Spanish province. He married Isabella, who's from Castile, right? That's the whole Torah over here. Well, Jews are kicked out of Spain in 1492. Torquemada is the person appointed by the Pope to head the Inquisition. Torquemada asked for some Hebrew books to read about these Jewish people. The first Hebrew book Torquemada gets to read about the Jewish people is the Torah. Okay? So, this is... Torquemada himself was the product of a conversal family. Yes. Now, that's important. Jews are kicked out of Spain in 1492. Most of the Jews go and they settle in Turkey. That's where many settle in Portugal. They kicked out Portugal 1497. That's like a brief period of time. They go to Turkey. First Jewish books are published in Turkey 1498 in Constantinople, Kushta. First Jewish book published in Turkey is?
The
Torah. The Torah! Excellent. Now, this is really important, okay? Between the middle of the 15th century, the end of the 16th century, there are more incunabula books of the Torah that are printed than there are of any other Jewish book except the Bible, except Chumash. This book is really important. So that is the issue. When they talk about the Torah, so there is an author, Reb Avram Zakuta, who's one of those who's kicked out of Spain in 1492. He writes about the Torah. Shezacha ze hechacham yoter mikulam. Yoter mi Rav Alfas ume harambam. Kulam lomdim misparav. That's what he writes in 1492. So everyone is learning the Torah. Why? So here's the story. The story seems to be that the Russia's purely Ashkenazi, trying to import Ashkenazis into Spain. Rambam purely Sephardi. But we're living in a world already that the Jewish people are looking for something that merges Ashkenaz and Sephard. And that something is the Torah. Now, how did the Torah do it? So you take this book and you open it up. And you see that in some ways, the book is very similar to Rambam. In other ways, it's very similar to Rush. Ready? Let's go. So the Torah basically begins with very apodictic, clear statements. Okay, I just opened this up randomly to Simin Reish Zayin. Shinui brachot ben pri ha'etz u'pri ha'adama ben davar she'en gidulo min ha'aretz u'ben davar she'gidulo min ha'aretz ha'nedavka bebracha rishona. He begins by saying the difference in brachot between stuff that grows on trees and stuff that grows from the ground, stuff that doesn't grow from the land at all, right? In other words, between shahakol and ha'etz and ha'adama, that difference is only when it comes to the bracha before you eat.
When it comes to the bracha after you eat, so those distinctions don't really matter. That's a very, again, it's true, berei nefashot will work for most fruits, most vegetables, most drinks, right? So basically, all these differences don't exist. Bracha achrona shaveh bekulam. And that bracha achrona is berei nefashot. He gives you the text of berei nefashot. He explains the bracha of berei nefashot. And he has a discussion. Does berei nefashot conclude with a bracha or not? Right? In other words, do you finish berei nefashot? Al kol ma shebarata lahachayot bem nefesh kol chai baruch chei haolamim? Do you just finish al kol ma shebarata lahachayot bem nefesh kol chai end? Birushalmi choteim baruch ata Hashem chei haolamim. Right? In other words, Bavli says you don't conclude with a bracha. Yerushalmi says you do conclude with a bracha. Haya noheg Adoni Avi Harash, that my father would conclude with a bracha. What? Baruch Ata Hashem Chei HaOlamim. That's what his father did. So now, what is interesting about this? And again, I open this randomly, right? What's interesting is, like the Rambam, he doesn't give me a Gemara. He doesn't even tell me where it comes from in the Gemara. He doesn't begin to say, oh, the Gemara Brachot, I can tell you right off the top of my head, Daf Mem Hey talks about the Bracha Berei Nefashot. It doesn't say that. Right? He doesn't give me any Gemara. Rules. Right? It's a rule. But he's also in the Ashkenaz tradition, not in the Rambam tradition, he'll give you different opinions. Do you finish with a Bracha or not finish with a Bracha? And he'll also tell you what Daddy did. What Daddy did for the Torah is really important. Daddy for the Torah is like the main posek, right? Makes sense. But he doesn't tell me just Daddy did that. He gives you a little bit of a history. Now, this accomplishes a few things, right? Like the Rambam, by the way, it's written in a rabbinic Mishnayic Hebrew, easier to understand, not written in Gemara Lashon. Right? Like the Rambam, no sources. Unlike the Rambam, he quotes different opinions. And he'll tell you what to do. This is the type of book that that people liked. Because it is a shiluv between the Ashkenaz approach and the Sfarad approach. That is the next point. Now, Yehuda Galinkin, Yehuda Galinsky, this historian who wrote his doctorate about the Torah. That's why I'm recording him a lot tonight. So he makes an interesting point. The Rush had two problems with Spanish culture when he came. And you see this clearly in the Rush's writings. Problem one was an educational problem. They don't learn enough Gemara. Problem two related to the way they paskined shilas. That they would paskin shilas based on these works of synopsis rather than, again, the two issues are connected, but one problem is on the educational system entirely. The other problem is on the rabbis. So the Rush didn't really like Spanish culture very much. Okay, makes sense, right? The Rush was very successful in his educational approach. The Rush set up yeshivot in Spain. The yeshivot in Spain, 50 years after the Rush passes away, have completely changed their curriculum. They used to learn only Rambam or Rif. They did not learn Gemara. The Rush is successful that they are now teaching Gemara.
Wow.
Very important. We know this because there are certain people who move to Spain at this time, and we have their written works on various parts of Torah. Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah of Gerundi. Gerundi is Gerona in Spain. Good? He came to Spain from France. He came, from Ivra, E-V-R-E-U-X, okay?
Ivrux. How do you pronounce it? E-V-R-E-U-X. I don't know. I'm not French. But, so, he comes there. Rabbi Yonah's earliest works are works on the Rif. Meaning, that's what he was teaching. As he gets older, he writes works on Gemara. So there's a book, Aliyot of Rabbi Yonah, on Baba Basra. And what that is this is Rabbi Yonah's work on, right, Gemara later on in his life. Gemara becomes a major focus. There is a change in what is taught in Spain. Now the Rush, basically himself, again, the Rush is the father of the Torah. The Rush, there are two major books of the Rush. There are the books of the Rush, which are called the Tosfot HaRush. Now the Tosfot HaRush are editions of Tosfot that the Rush brought with him from Germany, France, to Spain. Those books, very well accepted. He changed the curriculum. The Rush also wrote Psakim, which are halachot. The Rush wrote his halachot based on the order of the Gemara. But here's the problem. If I write a book of halacha based on the order of Gemara, it's not so useful. Because someone's going to call me with a shayla. And they're going to say, hey Schwartz, what bracha achrona do you make on a mushroom? And I'm going to say, oh my gosh, I have to remember, where's the Gemara discuss mushrooms? And then look it up. And by the right? And that's not user-friendly.
There's no index.
There's no, not only is there no index, but like you have to really know all of the Gemara to make the Rush a useful book. Because the book of halacha that's written according to the order of Gemara, right, is going to not allow you to answer a she'ela easily. Correct? The Rush also, because he wrote according to the order of the Gemara, he uses the language of the Gemara. That means if you're a common man or woman, an ordinary person, and you don't know what bracha you make on a mushroom, you're not going to be able to find it. If you do find it, you won't understand the words. Not so user-friendly. The tour is coming, and he's saying, listen, Daddy was successful in changing what the yeshivot do. Now they're learning Gemara. Great. But the rabbis still don't know what to do. Because when the rabbi gets a she'ela, the rabbi can't answer it, because he can't find it. So what I will do is I will take Daddy's work, I will translate it into Hebrew from Gemara Lashon. I will put it into an order so that people can look stuff up and they'll know how to answer the questions. But in so doing, he is at the one time bringing Daddy's Psakim into common parlance. So people now know what the Rush said and they couldn't have found it beforehand. But he's also doing something very different than what Daddy wanted. Because Daddy was a big champion of learning Gemara. And now he's writing a book that's not connected to the Gemara. Right? So you see the back and forth. But he's only doing this because Daddy had been successful. And what that's going to mean is the generation after the tour, there's going to be a backlash and try to put it back to learning Gemara again. Hey, you got the circle? This is, right, this circle basically is the way, this circle is the way halacha works forever. Now, there's another element of this, which is as follows. The Gemara has a rule of Hilchos HaKibasra. The rule of Hilchos HaKibasra basically means that you always follow the later opinion as a matter of halacha. The assumption is that the later authority saw the opinions of the earlier authorities. If the later authority decides to argue, that's because he found something wrong with the earlier authority, so you always follow the later authority.
Post-Talmud.
So the Gemara has a rule of Hilchos HaKibasra. The way the Gaonim understand the Gemara, the Isra of Hilchos HaKibasra,
which exists only after Abayi and Rava. But that's the way the Gaonim understand Gemara is. The Rosh says that Hilchos HaKabbasah applies post-Talmudically as well. And therefore the Rosh says, my opinion is going to win because I am after my predecessors. Right? Now here's the problem. If I use Hilchos HaKabbasah, and the Rosh tells us this in Sanhedrin Parak Dalet Halacha Vav, the Rosh goes on and on and on, Hilchos HaKabbasah, this is my life, this is why I'm right. That's why Ashkenaz wins over Sfarad, according to the Rosh, because I'm from Ashkenaz and I'm after the Rambam. Victory! I was born later. Well, there's a little bit of a problem, because I might have been born later, but there's going to be someone born after me. Right? Got that? So this is not so simple, but the tour bought into Daddy's approach of Hilchos HaKabbasah completely, and the Tor is reading this book and quoting all of the authorities in his mind to be the last word in Halacha. So the Tor is quoting all of the opinions, and then he always concludes, and Daddy said so. And when he says Daddy said so, that doesn't just mean that he's my daddy and therefore you should follow him because I'm his son, but it means he's the last authority. That's how we paskin. But you could see why this type of approach is short-lived. Yes. Right? It's not going to last forever. Okay, one other thing about the Rush and the Tour, which is interesting. We noted that the Rush had two agendas. One is an educational agenda, pedagogic agenda. What should they study in the yeshivot? Two, how should you go about answering she'elot? And the Rush has two different books, Tosfot Tarash, and the Psakim, the Halachot of the Rush. Well, the Halachot of the Rush ended up not being so useful in Psak Halacha because you couldn't find it. So the Halachot of the Rush ended up actually becoming a book of learning rather than a book of Halacha. And till this very day, right, the Rush is used in Yeshivot as a book. When you go through the Gemara, you pull out the Rush and you see what it says. It's a text of learning. It's an additional source that you use. It's not a book that is used in the realm of Halacha. The Tor wanted Daddy's book to become a Halacha book. So what the Tor did at first is he wrote what is called Kitzur Piskei Harash. He wrote a synopsis of Daddy's book. So you take out any Gemara, and in the back of any Gemara, right, you'll have the Rush. And then right at the back of the Rush, you'll have like one or two pages called Kitzur Piskei HaRush. This is Yevamis, right? So after Yevamis, you have all the Rushes, beautiful. And then you have the, actually, this edition's on the bottom of the Rush. You have Kitzur Piskei HaRush. The Kitzur Piskei HaRush is written by the Tor, and it's just like a one-line thing. So, for example, there's a whole discussion. The Rush tells us a story that Rabbi Akiva said, when I went to Nahar Da in order to make the year a leap year, I found a fellow named Nehemiah from Beit Deli, and he told me, Shamati she'im asina te'isha be'er tisra pi eid echad, ela Yehuda ben Bava, numeti lo ken hatorim. Amarlo Emarlahem Mishmi, Atem Yodim Shamedina Hazum Mishubesh the Gayasot, Kach Mikublaim Ram Gamliya Hazokin Shemesina Tisha Pi Edechad. Right, so the Rush has a whole story. The story is that one guy sees another guy says, oh, I heard that you don't allow a woman to get married with one witness. Again, this is the case of classical Aguna. Classical Aguna is like what we had by the World Trade Center. Or this fellow who died, who drowned. Right? Bauman. So again, Baruch Hashem, they found him. If you don't find him, so as a man of halacha, the wife can't remarry. But if you have a single witness, we allow the wife to remarry. A single witness that they found him, that he was dead. Right? Single witness. And the witness doesn't have to be a kosher witness. The halacha is even a woman, etc. But the Rush tells a story, right? Frida, objection taken. Right? But the Gemara tells a story, right?
The Gemara tells a story that one of the Amoraim said, "Oh, I heard that you don't allow a woman to get remarried based on one aid." And I told them, "No, no, no. We allow a woman to get remarried based on one aid. That's what I heard from Gamliel Hazakein." And when I came and I told it before Rabbi Gamliel, he said, "Yeah, you right." He has a whole story. That's what the Rosh has. That's Simin Yud Bet. Kitzur Piskei Harash. One line. Mesi'in al pi eid echad v'al pi eid mipi eid mipi isha. Right? In other words, the Rosh has a whole story. The Kitzur Piskei Harash says, single witness enough. Again, I just opened this randomly. Right? But why is this important? What's important is the tour the Rosh's son is trying to make daddy's work a work of practical halacha. But it didn't work. Because if I have a question, there's a body who's missing, I don't know, and I have to find out what type of testimony is necessary to allow this one to get me married, how am I going to find that answer? Well, if I remember that it's the last Marat in Yivamot, I'll be able to find, right, the Kitzur Piskei Harash. But how many people here know it's the last Marat in Yivamot?
They all do now.
Thank you. But that's the point. Right? So the Kitzur Piskei Harash is an attempt to make daddy's work halacha l'maisa work, but it didn't work. So therefore, later on, the Tor wrote another book, this 22-volume thing that takes up a whole shelf called the Tor. The Tor also wrote some other books. In every standard edition of the Chumash, there is a commentary of the Baal HaTurim, which is Gematrias. I have no idea. Like, if you ask me, a guy who writes a book about Gematrias has, like, nothing to do with, like, one of the major halachic authorities. Like, and what's going on here? I don't know. I don't know. But what I do know is he wrote it. According to tradition, the Tor one night couldn't sleep, and he wrote that whole book one night. That's the tradition. I don't know. I don't know what's going on over here. But the Tor is a fascinating man. His book becomes accepted precisely because it is the type of thing that's usable both in Sfarad and in Ashkenaz. It encompasses all the traditions and... Yeah, that's why it's an accepted book. Yeah.
How did the writing of the Tor solve the problem of being able to find the halacha?
Because the Tor is organized in a sequential way. It begins when I wake up in the morning, and then it goes until I go to sleep at night. Then it begins with Shabbos.
And this case that you mentioned of
because I know that there are four volumes of Tor. One volume is Orach Chaim about daily life. One volume is Eben HaEzer, which is laws of marriage and divorce, etc. All I have to think is, okay, in which volume is this? Oh, it's in Eben HaEzer. Okay, I pull out my Eben HaEzer. I look at the table of contents. I see, oh, Eben HaEzer. Well, it says Eben HaEzer Siman. He put together chapter headings. Chapter 17 in Eben HaEzer, rather, it's massive. Chapter 17 in Eben HaEzer. It's all the laws of the type of testimony necessary to allow a woman to be married. So I find it. Right? So it's I don't have to know Shas. But again, this in some ways, the success of the Tor is undermining what his father's main job in life was. But at the same time, it's taking what his father accomplished and is using it. Okay. Let's just break now. Let's make 2 points. Point one is, I think this is the last shiur I'm giving in the Halachic Men series. I could give a shiur next week. My term as rabbi ends August 31st. I think I'm not going to give shiur next week just because I finished the series. I've been giving these shiur for 10 years. Frida has been coming for 10 years.
Wow.
Frida is the person right at the beginning. We began the shiur. You're the last, so thank you, for 10 years. I gained a huge amount from saying the shiurim. When we first came to the shul, there was no regular shiur that was given by the rabbi. And we began the regular shiurim on Wednesday nights. People came, and people learned, and we did a whole host of halachic topics. We spent 2 years learning Navi. We did a lot of interesting things. It forced me to grow in my own Torah, and I had a lot of fun with it. So I want to thank all of you for coming, and you should keep on learning Torah. That's what's really important. All of the shiurim, there's I think a few of them that the recording didn't work, all the shiurim are up on YU Torah. Just this week, I got an email from somebody, Rabbi Schwartz, in 2010, you said this in the shiur. I'm like, how do you expect me to know this? And like, but this stuff is up there, I think. I think it's accessible. These particular shiurim that we do, this is just like, I happen to love the history stuff. I think it enhances my own study of Torah. That's why I like to do it. But ultimately, the goal is to love the Torah that we learn. That if you enjoy what you do, you're going to do it more and more and more. That's the goal. Thank all of you for coming. Yasha Koach, and let's continue to learn Torah.